Edutainment Learning is powered by Academica Virtual Education and Collegia TV. For more information, visit www.edutainmentlearning.com.
I'm William Rapp. I had a career in financial services that went from 1977 until 2016. I started out as an accountant, CPA for Ernst & Young, great firm, and then went on to financial services with Merrill Lynch, UBS, JP Morgan Chase, and finally, for the last 21 years of my career, the Fuji Bank Limited, which has since merged with some other banks and became Mizuho Bank. So I have a very fond memories of an exciting career in international banking, as it turned out. But I think that my career in banking, as exciting and fascinating and rewarding as it might have been, is not nearly as satisfying as being able to be what I am now, a volunteer docent at the 9/11 Memorial, I should say the National September 11th Memorial and Museum here in New York City. It's really a mission to support the museum's mission. Maybe we can make the world a better place with less hate, less intolerance, less ignorance. But I'm speaking today as a survivor who worked on the 82nd floor of the South Tower. I'm not here to represent or speak for the museum. I'm happy to tell you my story.
Absolutely. So can we, and thank you for sharing all that, can we just jump, we're going to just jump right into some student questions and some of my questions. So you touched a little bit about your banking career. Can you describe what a typical day looked like working on the 82nd floor of the South Tower?
As I was working for a bank that was headquartered in Tokyo, Japan, because of the time zone, they were open while we were closed. So we went to sleep at night and they were open. They were 14 hours ahead of us. And so my typical day would be to arrive at the World Trade Center using the subway, which went right into the concourse, the lower floor of the building, and came up to the 82nd floor. I would usually arrive around, say, 8:30 in the morning. And so this day, September 11th, it was actually, weather-wise, a very, very beautiful day. The sky was perfectly blue as I can remember it. The blue that we see mainly in September, this time of year. In fact, so blue and it was so clear that pilots and meteorologists actually refer to this as severe clear. And so when there were initial reports, when people knew that a hijacked airplane had crashed into the North Tower, the first thought was that this was a small plane, just because it was unthinkable that it would be anything else.
So can you talk about, like, what were your initial thoughts and your reactions when the first plane hit, like when you learned of the North Tower being hit?
Well, I'll add to your previous question. Because of the time zone, I would come into the office typically and start to read email from headquarters, you know, Tokyo. They were working while we were sleeping. We'd come in the morning and there'd be emails, you know, asking me to do something or information or whatever it might be. So that day I just came into the office, beautiful day. And then at 8:46, something happened. I didn't see it or hear it because actually my office was located at the South Tower on the south side. And the first plane, Flight 11, crashed or entered the North Tower from the north side. So being that the buildings were so large, and I was on the south side of the South Tower, and the first plane hit the north side of the North Tower, I didn't see or hear anything. But one of my colleagues who was had a view out the north side of the north of the South Tower. He looked out the window and he could see smoke. And rather than just leaving, he ran around the floor. I was in a secure area behind glass doors, and he pounded on the doors and he yelled, "Smoke, get out." That was enough for me. You know, I'm a New Yorker, and you hear something like that. There's something going on at the building next to you. You don't know what it is. You want to get away from it. And so initially, we found a stairway, and with my colleagues, we just started to walk down the stairs to evacuate out of the building in a very calm and orderly manner. There was an announcement by the building as we're walking down. Attention, building occupants. An aircraft has struck the North Tower. The South Tower, where we were, is secure. Emergency help is on the way. So that's all we knew. We didn't know the nature of it or anything else. And it's only really in retrospect that we look back and we actually know what happened that day. The events, the initial plane that hit the tower, that was one thing. And then it just got worse and worse as the news and what was happening, unfolded.
Can you walk us through kind of like what was your reaction when the second tower hit? Like, and where were you at when the South Tower was hit?
As we were walking down the stairs initially, from this 82nd floor, the stairs in the core of the building, the center of the building, the stairs ended, and there was a crossover hallway to get to the continuation of the stairs. But in that hallway, I encountered a freight elevator. You know, the towers were so large, believe it or not, there's 99 passenger elevators in each building. And in addition to that, there were freight elevators too. So this freight elevator, I noticed, had people on it. And I hadn't yet reached the continuation of the stairs. So I got on the elevator. The doors closed. And, the difference between life and death on 9/11, could be inches or seconds. I got into the elevator and the doors closed. And the elevator went down to the 44th floor sky lobby. The buildings were so large that they had express elevators, big elevators. 55 people could fit in these elevators that would go from the lobby up to the 44th floor sky lobby. Others would go up to the 78th floor sky lobby. This is in one movement from the lobby, street lobby, all the way up. Big elevators, and then from the 44th floor sky lobby or the 78th floor sky lobby, passengers would get out and get onto a local, a regular size, small elevator to get to their floor. So I would take an elevator from lobby up to 78, less than 1 minute, and then take a local elevator up to the 82nd floor. So this elevator came down, the freight elevator left us into the sky lobby on the 44th floor. And there was so much confusion. People really didn't know what was happening. There was kind of a presumption that the plane was a small plane. It hit the building. It was an accident. But of course, that made no sense because it was such a clear blue sky. And if anyone were to look at the building, they would see that the damage done could not have been done by a small plane. It was a very large plane. So, ironically and tragically, as I entered the 44th floor sky lobby, there was a man with a bullhorn from the Port Authority. The Port Authority of New York and New Jersey owned the World Trade Center, still do. And he had a bullhorn and he was making an announcement. Attention, building occupants. Do not evacuate. Do not go out to the plaza around the building. The South Tower we were is secure. And that was very confusing because as I was listening to that announcement, the second plane, Flight 175, hit my desk. The second plane struck the South Tower between the 77th and the 85th floor on the south side of the building toward the east. That's where my office was, on the 82nd floor on the south side of the building toward the east. Had I been there at that moment, I would have disappeared, just as 23 of my colleagues did. They were trapped and they couldn't get out, but I had already gotten down to the 44th floor. And so, at that moment, instead of thinking that this might be a small plane, that it might be an accident, it was very clear this is a terrorist attack. And if there's one plane and there's two planes, I'd better get out before the next one. Well, tragically, we know there was a third plane and a fourth plane, and they were both headed to Washington, D.C. Flight 77 struck the Pentagon at 9:37, and Flight 93 was, we believe, was headed to the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. And passengers on the plane became aware that planes had already entered, crashed into the World Trade Center, because they had cell phones and they were talking with people on the ground. And so they knew that their plane had been hijacked as well. And they decided to do something about it. They weren't just going to sit there and let it happen, because they knew that potentially many, many lives could have been lost had that plane actually hit the Capitol building. And they took a vote amongst themselves that yes, they would try to overtake the plane from the pilot, the hijacked pilot, one of the terrorists who was now flying the plane. And as they entered the cockpit, the pilot, the terrorist, crash landed the plane in a field near Shanksville, Pennsylvania, and everyone was killed. But that saved so many lives in the Capitol, and the bravery and the decision to try to overtake the plane was the perhaps one of the earliest acts of heroism that demonstrates that ordinary people on this day did extraordinary things. Ordinary people did things that would help others they didn't know. And in many cases, they were helping people survive and at risk of their own life. People gave their own life to help other people. And that's something we should remember, not like the terrorists who had this, they were brainwashed into this ideology of hate and killing. This is not human nature. Human nature is about, we care about the next guy. And if we see the next guy in trouble, we're going to help that next guy. And that's what happened in Flight 93 and all throughout all the events of 9/11 and the aftermath.
Can you, I wanted to kind of piggyback off of that. Can you talk about, as a New Yorker, because you didn't live, I mean, you don't, not as you don't live that far from the museum, you don't live that far from Ground Zero. Can you talk about the acts of unity and togetherness when New York came together after the events of September 11th?
It was an extraordinary time that everyone was having the same experience. Everyone knew. And New York, which is an extremely lively, busy city, it just stopped. And in fact, visitors who come to the museum tell me they might be from Barcelona or Rio de Janeiro or all around the world. And they tell me that things stopped where they were too, because there was a sense that this was an attack on civilization, or perhaps this was a failure of civilization that such an act could occur. And people were fearful that these terrorist acts would occur around the world. The expression back then was, we're all Americans. And I'm speaking of people all throughout the world. As I say, this was an attack not just on the World Trade Center, on New York. This was an attack on the world, on our sensibilities. New Yorkers initially were kind of like me, in shock. It's a very noisy city, and on this day it became very, very quiet. Everyone knew what had happened. Everyone was suffering the same or similar kinds of shock and dismay, and how can this happen, and what's going to come now? The fear, the rumors that were happening. I heard a rumor that the Empire State Building was hit, which was totally not true, but misinformation was circulating around until within a few days, the news reports were able to be accurate, and we knew the extent of the damage. There was a spirit of generosity in New York City. People realized that kindness is something. Well, I think it just came out. I think it just was the result of this terrible attack on everyone. And there was a recognition that, we're all in the same boat here. We're all under attack, and people cared about each other. I believe, as a survivor, I could have walked into any restaurant in New York City, sat down, and said, I was a survivor from 9/11, and they would have said, "Ah, sit down and have dinner on us." It was that sort of spirit of generosity, of kindness about everyone, and we're all in this together.
That is, and I feel like as someone who's been to the museum, there is that kind of spirit together. 'Cause are there a lot of docents who are survivors?
Well, the docents who are volunteers at the highest level of volunteering requires a lot of study and preparation. Many docents do have an association, either as a survivor or perhaps a first responder, perhaps a family member, or not. So maybe about a third of us have this direct connection, and others are just volunteering to become docents out of the goodness of their heart and caring. This was an event that touched everybody.
So you talk about ordinary people doing extraordinary things, and here we are 24 years later, you're still doing extraordinary things to honor those who've lost their lives on that fateful day. Looking back, what do you contribute most to your survival on that day?
Well, let me talk a little bit about ordinary people doing extraordinary things. When President Obama opened the museum in May 2014, the first thing that he spoke about was this young man named Wells Crowther. Wells Crowther lived in Long Island. He was an equities trader in a financial firm. Actually, above where I was. I was on the 82nd floor, and he was above where I was. In the South Tower, when the plane crashed into the building, there were 637 people who were trapped above the 77th floor. Unlike the North Tower, where all of the elevators were not working and the stairs were totally blocked, and the 1,355 people who were trapped up there had no way of hoping to escape or be rescued. In the South Tower, there was one stairway that was partially but not totally blocked. And there was this young man, Wells Crowther. He was a volunteer firefighter at his home in Long Island. And when he volunteered, when he was fighting fires, he put on a red bandana on his head, or perhaps over his mouth, to protect himself from the smoke. On this day, Wells Crowther went into action. He put on his red bandana, and he found the staircase that was partially but not totally blocked. And he found people. It was chaotic up there. The lights were out. It was smoke. People didn't know. They couldn't find the staircase. And he found that staircase, and he went and he found someone. And he brought them down below the impact floor, and they survived. And then he went back and he did it again. And then he went back and he did it again. 12 people, at least, of the 18 people who did find that stairway and did find their way down to safety and save their lives, for at least 12 of them, it was Wells Carruthers an ordinary person, he was just working that day like I was. Well, I didn't get much work done, but he was at work when this happened and he went into action. He was an ordinary person and he did extraordinary things. And we saw this in the building. You know, unlike these terrorists who had this ideology of hate, they were brainwashed. That's not human nature. Human nature is what we saw, where people helped other people to evacuate, especially in the case of somebody with a mobility issue, or a pregnant woman, or somebody in a wheelchair. Others would stop and they would carry the wheelchair down, or they would help the man or woman evacuate. It's just something people do, because human nature is such that we care about the next person, and if we see that they need help, they do. The coming together that we saw on 9/11 and the days following was unprecedented. And I would assert that if it happened then, it could happen now. People need to start listening to each other and stop with angry talk. And, all we want is the same thing. Human nature is such that we want to work, we want to go to school, we want to family and friends and our activities and so on. We don't want to cause trouble, and that's most people, and that's where human nature comes from. Most people are good people. Some people aren't. There are terrorists. There are people who have been brainwashed into these ideologies that would lead them to commit terrible acts of destructiveness. Well, we need to identify them before they act. But for the vast majority of people, we're good people. We care about each other and we want to live together and have a good life.
Beautifully said about acceptance, love, and kindness. I have a question from Miss Wilkie's class at Matter Academy, East Las Vegas. Miss Wilkie, you guys can unmute to ask.
Hello, my name is Mary, and my question is, did you ever move from New York like after the terrorist attack? Like after? Like I know you live there now, but like after did you move? And then I have one more question. When did it hit that you like knew it was a terrorist attack? Like, were you like freaking out or something? Or like, were you just like, yeah, that was my two questions.
Well, initially, when we were evacuating, all we knew that it was that the plane hit the building. We didn't know the nature of extent of it. We didn't know it was a terrorist attack. When the second plane hit, simply by virtue of that happening, I mean, if it had been an accident, the likelihood of having a second accident, just 17 minutes after the first one, was infinitesimally small, almost impossible. And so when the second plane hit, and that one I felt, the whole building moved, it, kind of shook back and forth. And I knew this is a terrorist attack. The feeling, in a way, I acted out of a survival mode. Nothing mattered at that moment except getting out of the building. And so when we look back, it's inconceivable that something like that would happen, but it did. And when we look back, we realize the enormity of it. But at the time, it was simply a matter of I have to get out of here. And when I walked down the 44 flights from the sky lobby on the 44th floor, I didn't see anyone. People in lower floors had already evacuated. And so actually, I appeared very calm, but inside, I think I was not. As to moving, it's true that many corporate offices decided. Well, I should mention that in February 26, 1993, 9/11 was not the first attempt by the Islamist extremists to destroy the World Trade Center. In February 1993, one of the terrorists planted a bomb just outside the North Tower and it detonated, $300 million worth of damage. Six people were killed, but that was the extent of it. They rebuilt. And so on September 11th, unfortunately, they accomplished their immediate objective, but This might not be well understood, but the reason that 9/11 happened, and this is from Osama bin Laden, the leader of Al-Qaeda, the terrorist group that committed this act, his objection was that the United States was supporting what he referred to as corrupt rulers in the Middle East, for example, in Saudi Arabia. The United States, after the Gulf War of 1991, had some soldiers on the ground to help support the peace in the Middle East. And worst of all, in their minds, the United States was supporting Israel. The objective, the reason why 9/11 happened was the terrorists wanted the United States to pull out all support, money, soldiers, people, any, just pull out support from the Middle East. They failed in their objective. In fact, the United States went into Afghanistan, where the terrorists were had training camps and were located, and they basically disabled Al-Qaeda. Osama bin Laden went into hiding for some time, but was eventually caught and killed. And so that was the situation back then.
Well put. Thank you for that.
Okay. Well, let me. I'm sorry. I didn't. I think I missed the
You're
second
fine.
question.
No, you actually answer both. So about you didn't leave New
Okay.
York. You still live in New York, so you stayed in New York.
I live
This
in New York. Some corporate offices moved to New Jersey, but one of the things that we was emphasized on 9/11, we will not let these terrorists change our lives. We want to, as quickly as we can, resolve, remove all the debris and rebuild. And but right after 9/11, we were present. Both the president and the mayor encouraged us to live life as normal, and we did as soon as we can. So I'm sorry, it's
No, you're
extra.
perfect. You're perfect. Ms. Wilkie, you guys have more questions?
Yeah, sorry, I just sent them in the chat.
You're good. Yeah.
So one of the first questions from another student was, how has your sense of safety shifted? Or do you feel like you're more brave now, more paranoid now after the tragedy?
Good question. Well, I would say that I am not brave. I am not courageous. That 9/11 was the worst day of my life, but it was also the luckiest day of my life. I was able to get out with my wife and go home. As I mentioned, we have forces in the world, people who would commit acts of terrorism, acts of destruction against other people. But, New Yorkers are tough, and we live in a dangerous and uncertain world. Anything could happen to anyone at any time. All we have is time. We don't know how much. And so, each day is precious. After 9/11, certainly, initially, it was a great fear that terrorists would continue to commit these acts of killing and destructiveness. Would there be suicide bombers that would show up in the subways? And in fact, the environment, and this is inexplicable. I can't explain why this happened, but after 9/11, other people were inspired to do these crazy acts. Like people would call an office building and say there was a bomb planted in the building. Why would they do that? Maybe referred to as copycat, or people just wanted to cause trouble. Why? I don't know. As for myself, I was asked right after 9/11, well, if you were offered a job in the 82nd floor, or they rebuilt a building or something, would you ever work on a high floor like that? And I said, absolutely, yes. I had a great view. And we can't live our lives in fear. We have to be careful. We have to be aware of what's going on. We have to avoid potential trouble. But that sense of insecurity or fear about what might happen, over time, it didn't happen. There were no suicide bombers, at least not in this country. There have been other acts of domestic terrorism, which is now a very big concern for Homeland Security and other law enforcement and the authorities. We're an individual. We become radicalized by watching, some website and then commit an act by going into a school or a church, something like that, and killing people. Unfortunately, those domestic terrorism acts are something that I think we're all concerned with. But in terms of now, here we are just about 24 years since 9/11. The city is a very safe city, actually, New York City. I've lived here over 50 years. I've never had any trouble with anything. I've never seen a knife or a gun, except for 9/11, when the terrorists tried to kill me. And so certainly there was a response at the time of fear and what's going to happen next. Is the world going to be a safe world that we can carry on with our lives as we have been, or not? And thankfully, because of many recommendations came out of the 9/11 Commission report to make the world or this country a safer and prevent take action to prevent any sort of hijacking that occurred. And so we have been lucky, but it's important that the authorities, the police, military remain ever vigilant, because there are forces and people out there who would still this now want to do harm to us.
Thank you for sharing all that. We'll go with a couple more student questions. Ms. Wilkie, I know you guys had a few. Go ahead and unmute to ask.
One of the other questions that they had was, how do you feel like you're doing now after the tragedy, all these years later?
This is an interesting question, because we understand from more recent years the phenomenon of post-traumatic stress disorder. People, for example, who participated in the Vietnam War or the Gulf War or Afghanistan, Iraq, soldiers who went to fight to help the country in its objectives. So many of them, sadly, come back suffering with post-traumatic stress disorder. It really affects their lives, and they need treatment to help to resolve it. But there are other people who actually have gone through some terrible things and have reached a state of post-traumatic growth. It's the idea that what could, might, but didn't kill you can make you stronger, can make you appreciate your life that much more, make you appreciate your relationships, put your values in order. And although 9/11 was the worst day of my life, it was the luckiest day of my life, because I got out. And yes, after an initial period of fear, uncertainty, insecurity, honestly, just being very, very sad about what had happened, kind of depressed. Over time, as things resolved, came back to a new normal, I began to recognize how lucky I was and how important every day is. Each day is a gift. We live in a dangerous world. We don't know the future. There could be some terrible accident. We know they happen, or a terrorist act, or you go to a doctor and you get some really bad news. And so at this point in my life, I don't know how much time I have, but each day is a gift. Each day is precious. And the opportunity to support the mission of the National September 11th Memorial and Museum, it gives my life meaning. And so I can take 9/11, my experience. And when people visit and I tell them my story, they're very interested to hear the story, and maybe it will inspire them in some way to be kind. In fact, I think Ralph asked me this question initially some years ago, He said, what can we tell students who were very, very nearby a terrible act of domestic terror that occurred in Las Vegas? And I said at that time, and I tell people at the visitors at the museum, the most important thing that we can do is to, it sounds simple, but it's not easy, is to be kind to ourselves. If we can do that, then we can be kind to people in our life, our family, friends, schoolmates, teachers, everyone we come in contact to in our life. And if we can do that, then we can be kind to everyone else. And it's the kindness of strangers, the comfort, the kindness of toward those we know and we love. This is something that m would make the world a little bit better place. Be kind and listen to others, because we're all here to have a good life and to love our life and to love other people and to feel good with other people. So thank you for that initial question, Ralph, that I answer almost every time I'm volunteering at the museum.
Well, I can honestly say I love you, and I'm very fortunate to call you a friend. And next time I'm in New York in that rare instance, I'll hit you up. And next time you're in Las Vegas, we want you to come to some of our campuses so we can have you and David, you guys come visit. So before we go, I'm going to ask one last question. You kind of touched on the advice for kids as far as kindness and acceptance and the importance of love. Can you, by chance, talk to the kids about why it's important to share those lessons from September 11th with the people that they know to keep these stories alive?
It's not what happens in our life. We live our lives, and unfortunately, or it's just natural, things happen. People die, loved ones die in our family. But the important thing is to share in the love that we feel. And 9/11 is something. It's an event that we should never, ever forget. It's a time when we saw the worst of humankind, the worst act of terrorism and destructiveness beyond what anyone could imagine. But in response, what we found is that the best of the best, people came out, people rushed down to Ground Zero to help. And so I think it's really important that we recognize that we're, and this goes for everyone here on planet Earth, we're all in the same boat together. And it's important to remember that human beings have great potential. Ordinary people can do extraordinary things. And so I hope that none of you on the call today or ever anyone never experiences anything like 9/11, a terrible thing to experience. But remember that within yourself, we ordinary people, we have the potential to do extraordinary things, and they could be extraordinarily terrible, or they can be extraordinarily loving and caring and creative to make the world a better place. Many people listening today have the potential to go on and make the world a better place, to help. We could go to fly to Mars, could cure cancer. We have it within ourselves. And so if we each work together cooperatively to do this, we can certainly make the world a better place, because the alternative is unthinkable.
Well, thank you for spending time with us today, William. And you're just a wonderful individual, and I'm honored to know you. And before I end the meeting for all, before I end the call, can our class, can we all say thank you to William for taking time out of his day to talk to us today?
Thanks.
Thank you.